Nope, still not. Okay, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Matt from Rocky's War Room. And today we have episode 9 of Antari's Adventures, The Mercenaries.
Awesome.
Cheers.
You got chills with that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Isn't it, though?
I have a specific one for Antari's pod, but I did not get it done in time. So,
boo. It's gonna be cool. Boo on you, sir.
It's
boo.
A big picture of Tim holding a book and a sword. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
It's Kevin and Sergey doing a drop kick is what it is. Yeah.
Gonna be done.
We're talking mercs today, which is awesome. That means we got through all the factions, which is great. So if anybody wants to specifically pick a faction on our podcast now, they can go, oh, I'm interested in Isaurians. Boom, Isaurians. So now let's talk mercenaries. Tim, you want to start us off with the mercenaries? And
yeah, I mean, there's not the same sort of background as there is to all the other factions, because the mercenaries are made up of a whole bunch of different people. It's a combination of the occasional Boromite clan, which hires itself out as a mercenary army to go and serve for somebody else. And it's the what's called the Freeborn Adventurers, who also just hire themselves out. And in Xylos, that's the first supplement, you've actually got lists for Freeborn mercenaries, and you've got lists for the Boromite clans. But it also includes not just those two people who will hire themselves out quite happily, but also includes a whole load of individual units that you'll get, which come from different species, different races, and from different areas. What we've done to make it easier, we sort of consolidated all the mercenary rules into one thing, which can be found on the Nexus under Mercenaries for Hire page. There's a page which just called Mercenaries hyphen for hyphen hire, which makes it easier, I guess. So you just look on there and you'll see an overview of what the mercenaries are. And there is a PDF which summarizes all the mercenaries for hire rules. So you can just hire the individual units I've mentioned, like Boven Tuk and Hansen Iroba, or the Hook, or the Askar, or the Engineers, or even Tog if you want to go that way. But the main thing in what we're trying to do is actually say, look, mercenaries are a fact of Antarian life, because there's loads of friction along the borders. You've got planets who don't want to be taken over by either Imtels, and they're stuck between two Imtels, so they're going to hire anybody in that they can, and they'll use the Freeborn as brokers. Or you've got people in the Determinate who want to bolster their own armies, so they have a need and they hire in some mercenaries to fill that niche. Or eventually, in version 2, will actually allow for full mercenary armies as well in different types. So whilst you've got the mercenaries, the Freeborn mercenaries for hire in Xylos. I've written a whole handbook which has got 3 mercenaries for hire book. And it's also got the Marek, who aren't really Freeborn. They're not really mercenaries. They're just their exiles, Algrin House. But they're most similar to mercenaries. And the Marek is almost like freebooters as well, because they pulled in all sorts of ne'er-do-wells from anywhere and everywhere, and the criminals from the Algrin underworld say, oh, I want to be a Marek now. And the Marek say, yeah, but you were chucked out because you're a criminal, in which case the Algrin criminal just says, yeah, but so are you. Yeah, so there we go. But in general, though, the mercenaries, you can use the mercenaries for hire, which are individual units. And there is, at the moment, there is about 4 or 5 different ones, depending on how you look at it. You have got Hansen Nairoba and Boven Tuk. Boven Tuk is a Feren, a Makari feral chieftain. And he is just an absolute nutter when you get him on the table block. So you, on the tabletop, so you can get Hansen, Iroba, and Boven Tuk as commanders. You've got the Hook Bounty Hunter, who is an individual hunter come sniper. And they come from the Hook, are a race, a very single-minded race. They are geared towards the hunt and improving themselves in the hunt. And boosting, and by doing hunts, they boost their hack, which is, if you like, their, sort of like their reputation and their name and fame amongst all Hook. And they're useful as a really niche, potentially powerful melee unit if you put them with either the Ancris or the actual. They can take lava mites if you really want. Mm-hmm. And they can actually take out a commander, yes, or capture a commander. They're really quite a powerful niche thing on their own. Or you can actually hire some ne'er-do-well Boromite combat engineers, freelance combat engineers. They're nowhere near as the Hook or the normal Boromite combat engineers, but nonetheless, they're useful. You've got Tog and Armano Haran, who are mercenary fighters, individuals. So you can hire those as allies or...
Well, I wish I could pronounce all this stuff as well as Tim does.
Brilliant. Well, it's an education from Rick.
There you go.
Rick basically tried to pull together the Hook and the Ancris, and he wanted the Hook name itself to sound and look really alien on the page. Awesome. Hence, you've got this H U umlet KK. So it does, and it's just, and it's almost like it's like puking up at the end of it.
It sounds like, a couple of things. First off, it sounds like, when you're saying Hook, it's you're needing a bicarb.
Very nearly, very nearly.
And then the mercenaries here sound very, very, very much like the Lance Connects from the 15th
in many ways, century. In many ways, they are. You're absolutely right. And that's a really nice comparison, I think. You can almost take it as well if you go into – Rick and I discussed this when we were just talking about the mercenaries as a whole. You can think of the Italian Condotta.
Yeah.
And all those – which is the same sort of thing you're talking about, really. It's – you know, that yes, you're sending out mercenaries to fight for yourself, but it may well be that if you just send out an army that's composed of purely mercenaries, they're just going to turn up in the battle, fire a few shots, and think, no, that's it. Should we toss a coin as to who won? You know, and
why if you put, you know, mercenaries against mercenaries, they're getting paid either way,
yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, why kill yourself if you can just say, you know, hey, let's play a game of chess.
Yeah, yes, that's much better. It's much better. None of us is going to die. And I'll tell you what, I'll let you have the chessboard and men if you win.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's high stakes right there.
Yeah, so it's there are times when it could well be that. And we've got these special mercenary for hire rules, which actually allow for all these mercenaries included in these armies, and what they do is basically if you've got a force which has got some mercenaries, when you actually take a break test with mercenaries, you don't roll on the normal break test, you roll on the mercenary break test chart, and effectively if your mercenaries outnumber the number of regular units you've got, it may well be that the mercenaries may go over to the enemy and join the enemy. Or it may just be that they'll think, oh, rats, let's just go out in a blaze of glory. But it's a really nice test, and it's actually really quite fun, and it adds a risk into the use of mercenaries. You've got to be careful about using that. Really, you ought to use that break test table in the Mercenaries for Hire document, which is downloadable from that Mercenaries for Hire page I mentioned. And, of course, we've Togan and Armano Haran, as I said, aren't really mercenaries. They're basically mercenary fighters, which you can use them as allies. But you can access those in the mercenary fighters table. And then lastly, we have got the Askar, who are an insectoid species really, and they are the legacy of people who are probably around before humans came into Antares. But in the past, there were loads of different Askaar morphs, but all we've got now, or at least it looks as if the only people that the Freeborn discovered now, were the eggs of the Askaar protectors, protector warriors. So there is especially been bred to be combat capable and for use in combat.
These are the grasshopper dudes.
These are the grasshopper dudes, yeah. And they are just really tough, really quite fast.
I got your back, Tim.
Yeah, they're their res is pretty tough. Yeah, thanks, mate. They are supposed to be the ultimate in warriors from their own species, so that's why they're actually quite a tough unit on the tabletop. The thing is, of course, is they're actually quite expensive. Tables. Yeah. As soon as you start equipping them with anything and everything, they become really expensive. And if you start dealing with them quite quickly, they become a bit... they start taking up all the things you might want otherwise to have on your tabletop. But that's what they're supposed to be. But the good thing about the Askaar is, apart from the fact they look really, really cool, and I should say the same as the Herc. I think the Herc looks fantastic. There's like the shiny man. This great. And the Askaar and the Herc can also be used by Gar because
they can.
They're not humans.
Oh, okay.
Look out, Kevin.
My Gar just got a lot better at capturing objectives.
Yes. I'm trying to have a look. I can't see any rules which say they can't be used by Gar. Useful.
Well, it just says this enabled the Concord, Istorian, Boromite, Freeborn, and Algorin forces to incorporate mercenaries. So I assumed that meant no Gar.
I can't see it. It may well have been dropped off. Yeah, but there's no reason why Herc can't be hired by Gar.
Nice. I'm taking that as rules canon from now on and forever. Any tournament I go to, I'm like, no. Tim said I can do this.
And it is actually the same as it's the same as the Askaar, who can also be hired by Gar. But Askaar are also a common component in the Vol armies as well. But we haven't actually come onto the Vol, and I shouldn't say much about the Vol, apart from they're very, very different. And they should be really quite fun when we manage to get around to producing them. Obviously,
won't leave you alone.
Can I quote this? This is actually in the rules on the Nexus, and it's actually downloadable from the website as well. In the Antares Mercenaries for Hire PDF, it says, unless otherwise stated, the above faction constraints on hiring a human mercenary unit apply. Otherwise, non-human mercenaries, such as the Herc, may be hired by any faction, including Gar. Ah,
that is awesome. I should have read that all the way through.
Sweet.
There we go. So that's fantastic.
So what you get for not reading.
Yep.
Yeah. See, it helps. Those letters you were taught at school, really great.
They mix together nicely to make things that are called words. Those words are then stirred together, become sentences. Sentences are strung together, make paragraphs. Millions, billions of applications.
I haven't ever encountered an application for words personally.
Yeah, I like words, especially like words, which mean you can use Herc and Askaar and Gar units. I have actually used a Herc in a Gar force, and as you say, as an objective castering unit, he is without par. I mean, the base Herc comes along with three enhanced Angris being beasts who were genetically assembled sometime in the past, it's thought, or they may have been naturally occurring, but they've been modified in several different ways. And the ones which the Herc normally has with him were modified to be actual superb hunters. So they're really quite tough. They are quite strong, but like all beasts, they're fairly low command, and they're fairly agile as well. And they've got two attacks at SV2, and they are just really nasty. But the good thing about them is if you want to capture a person, they've got the subdue trait to on them as well, as does the Hook himself. So you can actually capture a person by shooting him, whereas if other units shoot at a person, they tend to kill him or her.
As a reminder, everybody, you can find out a lot more about these guys on the Antares Nexus. I want to encourage everybody to hop over there.
All of just reading all of this from the gatesofantares.com / all the pages linked to from the mercenaries -for-hire page. So it's all in there. You could probably just type in mercenaries for hire in the search box as well, and it'll come up the same page. And I'm just reading everything. I've just this moment downloaded it because, as I said, we were busy decorating, and I'm reading it now. So there we go.
So
hello, Bridge. Yeah.
But back to that picture you just posted with the beasts.
This is Hook.
Yes, this is the Hook.
I'm going to be honest. That color scheme is not the best option.
I think it's cool.
I think it's really cool, but we've had a number of different Hook color schemes come up, but basically
I like him.
The Hook can be almost any color you like, and the Angries are going to be painted or have a temporary re-phenotyping to actually come up with different colors anyway, depending on what they want to be. And Ruben once again mentions Togs. Every time we mention mercenaries, Ruben says Togs. Togs not a mercenary. He is an individual. He is a mercenary fighter, so he's just used as an ally, and we won't have any more Togs. Trouble is with Tog is that he was created for the box set of the Antares dice game, and he was a free figure to go along with that. And he was just happens to be a figure that was lying around, which one of the modelers had made in their spare time, saying, "Oh, I've got this. Nice. What do you fancy for it?" And the trouble is, Rick just thought, "Oh, yeah, that's just great. Let's put us together some rules for Tog as a special one-off. You know, this will be fun." And he never actually intended it to be incorporated into the longer-term background of Antares. So if you actually read in the Tog thing, it explicitly says that he was the only one of his kind ever known. That's across the whole of Antares. I think it deals with stasis capsules and all the rest of it and that sort of stuff. So we will never, ever, ever see a race of Tog coming around.
I do like Tog.
Like the Tog he is. He's quite potent. So you've got to be
careful. Heartbreaking.
I'd use the modified rules, which are on the Nexus, because they've actually put him altered him slightly, so he can actually be used on the table a little bit.
I love that rendering. The picture.
Oh, it's a great. Yes, it's a great concept.
It's a great picture. Yeah, it is a great picture. So,
Is he going to be then? Like eliminated in version 2? Can you answer that question, or is he gonna?
I can't answer that question, but I would like him just to disappear into the background because he's just so so powerful on his own. I'm sure that'll be unpopular. That'll be very unpopular with Ruben.
Yeah, but... And we just lost 47 subs.
But you know, for the time being, he's actually in the stuff I've written for version 2. So you know, he's going to be able to be used and pulled in. And it's similar with the Mana Haran, though he's not quite as powerful as Tog King Ru. I mean, Tog on his own comes in one character comes about 170 points in version 1.
Yeah,
that's a bit spendy for a dude.
Hello,
he's kind of worth it. He's one of the few that I really feel like is worth the insane price tag.
And Ruben, with all his crying and sad face, he says, "Just Togs, father." You can certainly probably find 100 of them on eBay somewhere or something and make an army of Togs if you want.
Yeah, you could do that.
Counts as Boromite's army.
One of the things I tried to do with the version 2 mercenary lists is make it so you could actually pull in almost anything from anywhere and actually fit it into the list. So it's got the option to actually change some of the actual contents of the squad. So they've got different human morphs with them.
So you could actually have
squads. I mean, it's, you know, obviously the idea is that we'll make mercenaries, because we had some great sketches in before the shutdown. We had some really lovely sketches coming in about some more different mercenaries and some really great different ferals. But of course, the shutdown really hit that on the head. And eventually we produce our own armies. But in the meantime, I can see, frankly, loads of clubs or individual players just thinking, well, I've got these figures from X, you know, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of firms who do some really nice 28
figures. We can clone him. We have the technology.
So game wise, they seem to be very much like the Dogs of War from, what was it, 4th or 5th edition of Warhammer Fantasy Battle, where you can, you know, there are certain, quote, mercenary units that are strictly for the mercenaries, but in the Dogs of War list, you could pretty much take anybody. If, you know, if you had a squad of dwarves, you could throw them into your Dogs of War list.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you have the privateer faction as well, which
The privateer faction has to be a mix of things. So it has to have some Boromites, it has to have some Freeborn. And then on top of that, you can shove in a whole load of different places, even some Gar outcasts if you really want. Though you can't take Gar outcasts with Algorin, because otherwise you get a certain amount of dissension in the ranks before you even go anywhere. And obviously the privateer list is in 2R56, so it's in Drone Scourge.
Yes, it's actually the list I'm building it is the list I'm building next. I'm really excited about that, actually. It's a cool list.
You know, I saw a lot of people on the website asking, is Drone Scourge, a liable book to get? I mean, should I get it?
My favorite one. Hands down.
Good.
I have to answer that question with absolutely yes.
Yeah.
It has got so much stuff in it. And the story is probably, for me, that's my thing, is each book. I love the story, Tim.
Yeah. But you're driven by the narrative, and yes, that's the thing we want to keep into Antares going into version 2. Is, you know, people, long-term players know that we're gradually developing the story over the years, and that comes in from various different things that have happened and been contributed to by players and by the game stays, which we've actually had, and they're shaping the story of Antares as we go forward. So we come to a crux point in the story, and actually what happens at the game's days then affects what goes on from there onwards. So
it's just such a unique idea. It's really
cool. It is so cool.
Yeah, and it would have happened with this year's game's day, which I was very, very upset.
Me and Kevin are about to burst into tears over that.
Yeah, not good.
It's okay. We got everything locked and loaded with the airlines as soon as I think it's kosher, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cracking. Well, that'd be lovely. It'd be lovely to see you guys. But anyway, going back to the mercenaries and all the rest of it. Yeah, so you've got the privateers list, who is almost a mercenaries list, except they're solidly geared towards cracking open hulls and capturing enemy ships whole. That's why they're the salvageers, of course, rather than pirates. Sorry, they've never been pirates. They've always been valid privateers or operating under a license. No, I know you can't make out the signature, but believe me, it's a real signature. Oh dear me, don't smudge the ink. that sort of approach.
It was signed this morning by
yes
somebody.
Captain Von Stubing.
M Mouse. I don't know who this M Mouse character is, but he was a high ranking person in this corporation. Yeah. That's sort of a list, but they've got to be a real mix. Jan from Germany is really, really good with his mercenary company, the White Company. And they're actually privateers rather than a mercenary company. And he's got a really effective force and uses them really, really well in at the games days. And he has great fun with that, which is lovely to see. So they're a sort of mercenary. As I said, they're in Drone Scourge anyway. But the rest of the mercenaries, as I said, it's something I'm hoping that we'll be able to develop. And it's something I certainly started seeing sketches for, whether as mercenaries or as new types of ferals at the tail end of last year and the start of this. But the other thing we had at the start of the year, which is worth mentioning, we had the mercenary design competition. Mm-hmm. We got 30 or 40 entries, I don't know, of this sometimes really quite detailed background. And we ran through them and judged, and we actually had a winner. And we actually informed the winner that he'd won, which is absolutely fantastic. And then shutdown happened. We got some sketches, which are really good, and we're sending them back to the concept artist to say, oh, develop this one a bit more. And it's quite an original design. And then, of course, lockdown happened, so we weren't able to do anything else and take it any further. But I'm hoping that once lockdown comes back, we'll be able to do a little bit of work on that, which would be fantastic. The Ruben was mentioning about how the Herc, Asgard, and Angris came together, which was from a set of four mercs, which one of our sculptors just threw together and said, well, what do you think of these? And effectively, what happened was we said, oh, yes, we could use that one really easily as a lovely mercenary grouped mercenary unit. We can use that one as a single mercenary, and that was the Herc who was first out, and it was fantastic. And then the Angris, which is actually supposed to be a mercenary, ended up being these beasts, the Angris and the hunting Angris. And there's a fourth one, which we probably won't see. We won't probably develop in the future. Sometimes these things come out just as pure experiments, pure explorations, and we don't take them any further because we're not over keen with it, or basically because we're just not over keen on the sculpts. We're not as... don't think the sculpts will do things as much credit as the others. And that, yeah, it's hit and miss sometimes. But I think from those four, we got out the Asgard, the Herc, and the Angris, which is actually really, really quite good.
Absolutely. They're really great sculpts too, particularly the Asgard. I'm a huge fan.
One of my favorite models.
Yeah.
I'm working on Ruben. Ruben has Facebook messaged me.
No.
A picture of what he was talking about. So let me grab that right quick. He's asking about the one on the left in this picture here. Let me get it.
Yeah.
I think the only models that I do not have mercenary wise is the Asgard. And I don't know what I'm waiting for.
They're great, especially now that I know I can take them in Gar.
He said, thanks, Tim. Let's see. Let me get it up here. Sorry for the delay here. Keep talking, please.
Yeah. So there we go. So we've
here got it is. What he's asking about this one on the left.
Yeah, that one on the that tall one on the left. No, we weren't over keen on that one. We weren't over keen on the weapon either. So we may not probably won't do anything with him. I think the general consensus was that it's too similar to the Asgard to actually take any further. So as you can see from that list, we shrunk the Angris. We made the Herc into a much better, a much more animated pose. And obviously the Asgard, I think we kept around about the same size. But it's too similar to the Asgard, really, that one. So and of the two, the Asgard is obviously a much, much better model, much, much better figure. And it suits itself to all sorts of different poses and running. And it's really quite different. So, you know, there we go. I've run Asgard on table. I had to play test the things, but I occasionally just shove them in because they're just fun to have, and it's something which people see on the table and start worrying about.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, they just have such good agility, which means you can just sprint like a madman and never care about getting the pin because you're not going to get it.
Yeah, because they have a chance, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the whole idea of them. They were supposed to be this really fast, deadly game. Deadly set of hunters, which this massive civilization, this Antarian civilization, had produced specifically for defense, or rather protection. They're protector warriors. So rather than just pure fighters, they are more, their whole life is about, well, it originally was about protecting and looking after the species that was going forward. I could also mention that we're also looking at producing some other, along with the mercenary competition, and I'm hoping, really, really hoping we get that finished when things come back. Obviously, I can't speak officially at the moment because I'm not actually back at work yet. Won't be back at work till the end of the month. But we were also looking at producing some other two mercenary units, one of whom was a Newhu Hunter unit. So they were specifically geared towards Newhu hunting. Mm. And the other one we were looking at was actually having a rogue Newhu for them to hunt. But we'll see how that came out. And I saw some really quite nice sketches, which might have come out, might not have come out. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, this is all stuff that we're looking at, but we don't know if it will come out now because everything is in the air now about Antares. Don't know what's going to happen.
I think my favorite looking mercenaries and my favorite, my personal favorite, I have not painted them yet, is Bova Tuck.
Fantastic. All of the mercenaries look fantastic.
They do. Yeah. But this guy on the right, this Tuck.
Yeah.
I'm lost for words when I look at it. He's like a...
A tall dwarf. Say it. He's a tall dwarf.
Thank you.
That's why you like him.
He actually looks, don't you think his facially he looks a lot like Matt, though, doesn't he?
Oh, well, actually, he does.
Just a bad Halloween costume coming up.
See, I like the other guy better.
That Hanson O'Robert. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is the elite. People aren't really sure where Hanson came from, but he is the elite mercenary captain. And it was his story and his relationship with Yu Ham Nu, which Rick carried through the first book and into Xylos. And we've now left at the end of Xylos with Hansa apparently just dropping off the face of Antares. But actually, he was around Xylos, orbiting in a ship, trying to find out how to get through the excluding field, to find out what happened to Yu Ham Nu. And there's the suggestion that this is, I don't know whether it's a platonic love story or if it's a real commitment or a sense of loyalty. It may well even be the sort of like the love story, the Romeo and Juliet of Antares, though I hope both don't die. But of course, we use that in the Gremlin Cart story and the background for that, because Yu Ham Nu started sending out signals from within the Xylos protective zone. So people knew that Yu Ham Nu was alive, but also there were signals coming out. This is the story, we go into the story here a little bit, which said that Antares which was starting to predict the collapse of gates to the stars around Antares, which is interesting. So there may be a way to prevent the collapse, which seems to be imminent at the moment. And that's what we're doing. That's where the story's going. But mercenaries will probably play quite a role in that, because it seems that it's all really based and focused around the Determinate, which I think we put a map up about some time ago. That's it, really, I think. I've rabbited on now for half an hour about the background and everything else. It's a case of really probably leaving them. I don't know how many of these you've used on the table, guys.
Pretty much all of them at this point.
I've used none.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. You'll see plenty of Huck.
Great. I've used Asgard quite a few times. I'm kind of like you, Tim. A lot of times it's more of a flare unit. It's not necessarily the most efficient use of points on some of the lists I bring them on, but they're so cool. And they draw the eye. So it's just people know their output and they're definitely like, they're going to be drawing fire no matter what. But I mean, they can be equipped so differently. I mean, by themselves, they come default with the God bless the rifles. What they
compression
call
carbine.
Compression carbines. There we go. Which are really neat. They have the added bonus of completely ignoring cover. So with their insane agility, you can move them across the battlefield quickly. They're very good in close combat because they have a hand weapon that's strike value 1. And I mean, with no cover, you could shoot at someone, charge after them, right? And then you can also make them even more effective if you give them mag lashes, which is just so fun because then they get 2 attacks each and just become this melee powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're very fun. And then the Huck is really cool. He's very interesting unit. I've used him in 1 battle so far, but I'm definitely
fielded him in the last battle report.
Yeah. His mag rifle being custom is so cool. He becomes this like pseudo sniper who's also just a crazy melee unit. But I would say the Huck even more so embodies the you know, drawing target priority because he's a giant shark man with a super gun surrounded by war dogs. And so really he does once again draw the attention of the enemy, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's what I do. I do exactly the same. I use him to draw focus and distract opposition because they have to deal with him. And it, hopefully that they'll, the idea, I suppose, what we're talking about drawing fire all the time is actually trying to make people overcommit to that, to the attacking of that unit and distracting their attention from whatever their original game plan was right at the start of the battle. Oh, and nice. Yeah, and that's what often happens. The Huck comes up, he starts racing towards perhaps a potentially vulnerable unit or even a critical unit. Mm-hmm. And if you, I've found he's more use if you actually send him towards a critical unit. So playing against Virai, for example, if you charge him towards one of the second instances, the opponent instantly starts rediverting everything onto trying to put pins on the Huck and knock off the angries so that he doesn't take out the second instance, because once into melee, there's something like 2, 4, 6 SV2 from the Angries, if he's not injured, of course. Then you've got the Huck itself, who's got the mag. He's just got a mag pistol normally, but you can actually give him an electro lash as well. So he's actually going in with some really quite nasty hand-to-hand attacks. And then if you really want to be annoying, he's got these little micro grenades which he can launch from his X-sub launcher on his gun. But as soon as you start adding all of this lot in, he becomes very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm. The converting shots to lucky hits is also the bane of anybody who relies on buddy drones. It's so useful. Like, if you shoot a Nuhu and you can just target the
nano drone.
That's so, so impactful. Or if you have a bunch of dudes hiding behind a battlefield, nobody's going to get that battlefield off quicker than the Huck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, he's -2 to hit through it, but he's actually a sniper, really. He's an active sniper, so he's really accurate anyway. And, yeah, lucky hit. Okay, get rid of that batter shield. Bonk. And all of a sudden, that's everybody really vulnerable.
Yep. And,
yeah, and that's a really great use for him as well.
But I don't know. I'll always use mercenaries just from like a fluff standpoint. It's just like I've always loved mercenaries. So I'm just so happy they're so cool in Antares because, I can't tell you how many times I've fielded the Askar just to see him on the table.
absolutely.
This decision, but it's just, I don't know. I love them. And
yeah, just so. They are great. John Harrington painted mine for me because I was going through a particularly bad patch with my arm. He ended up doing a really great job. So it's really quite chuffed. Thanks, John. But as you say, it's when I do have one of these games where I'm not playtesting It's one of those units you just think, yeah, I'll put it on because it's just fun to have. Because you can just load them up with drones as well, which is something I didn't mention. But the Hook can actually have a spotter drone, a medi drone, a couple of shield drones. So he becomes quite a tough little cookie. And for expensive, for quite a tough little cookie.
He's very hard to take out.
Yeah, so see, that's that attraction you're talking about, Kevin, wasn't it?
Yeah. And like you said, it's a more so. I mean, you could add just a single drone to him, and that's going to communicate to your opponent that you either have some kind of master plan or just really want him to have that survivability. So it just makes the target priority even more so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always used them as a heavily distractive unit.
Yeah.
And my son does it brilliantly because
of course he does.
I had no idea when we first I bought two.
Yeah. Oh wow.
And one for him, one for myself, with plenty of extra puppies that go along with it. And I said, let's put them together against each other. And he was more distractive with it than I was. Me, I was just kind of running at things, and he just kind of was controlling where I ran. You know.
Oh right. So, yeah. Good.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not that I'm, not a good player or anything. It's just that my son tactically just wipes the floor with me when it comes to mercenaries and, things I've never played games with. But that's besides the point. It's just I think he's a very good table control unit.
Yeah.
He's so frustrating. Sorry, Tim.
No, go on.
He's so frustratingly hard to kill and hard to pin out because he has high command that Kevin got me into a tight spot in the last battle report, and my only chance was to kill one unit, and the Huck was out in the opens, and he had some drop troops that were in heavy dense forest, and I had to go for the guys in the dense forest because I just knew for a fact that I didn't have enough shots to deal with all of the dogs plus the Huck plus the wound. It's they are deceptively hard to kill. There's so many steps that you have to go through to actually knock the Huck off the field.
Oh yeah,
you almost just want to ignore him.
If you add war dogs to him, it's literally like it just becomes this it's genetically enhanced war dog meat armor.
It's true.
For the Huck, which is just and that's the other thing is so weird about him is it's like I could see using him as not even like a heavy melee unit like Sergey said, you could have if you have his positioning right and you're going against an opponent like the Isaurians or the Concord in which they have such a heavy need for that advantage of buddy drones. While the Huck is expensive, he can pay for himself just by sitting there and popping off people's battlefields, people's nano drones, like he can be such a nuisance if people don't concentrate fire on him just for the simple fact that it's hard to get at him. I mean, because he has wound as well, so even when you do get at him, he's just going to have a permanent pin for a while. And having 7 accuracy and having nothing to obstruct his shot means that he can still keep going after being wounded easily and still have better accuracy than the average trooper.
Yeah.
Significantly better. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is that, as you said, he very often does survive to the end, but he may have attracted a lot of pins. But in so doing, you've been able to do things elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And that's the normal rank and file is like, yeah, shoot the shark guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially Gar Outcasts, I'm assuming, now that we know that that's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The Hook background I really liked is there's this quintessential hunters on their homeworld and their whole ethos is about gaining Hirach, which is more to do with, as I said, this reputation, this I am the ultimate bounty hunter in the galaxy sort of thing, which is a bit Star Warsy and Mando, I guess.
They sound very Trandoshan.
Nothing wrong with being Mando-y.
Yeah, absolutely.
They actually sound more like the Trandoshans in Star Wars.
Trandoshans? Oh, the Trandoshans. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the
Bosk, the lizard dude.
Yeah, yeah, I know who you mean.
They are in the current expanded
universe,
the canon expanded universe. They are very much a society of bounty hunters or hunters in general, and they have, for lack of a better term, annual contests of hunting.
Yeah.
And that's where the young ones, you know, get, you know, their license, so to speak, to become hunters of the Trandoshans. And, you know, the one who, I guess, wins, so to speak, he is the leader of that tribe until the next year's, you know.
Now, the Huck, they can't stand one another, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, the Huck is very much... I know what you mean about the Trandoshans and Bosk and all the rest of it, and that's... That's actually, I think that was actually in the original extended universe as well. Mm-hmm. But the difference is that the Herc will not have a tribe. They are like the lone prairie hunters that we
like
have.
Like predator.
The UK. Yeah, that they are. Yes, they are a single. They are that single predator who goes out, and they have their hunting area, and woe betide anybody who enters their range, because they're to be seen off. And that developed into this Hurak, and then they developed off work, where Hurak became much more about reputation amongst the stars and amongst everyone, and improving that became their main
baby
goal.
We haven't
got into that, but I would imagine that, again, it's driven by a female Hurak, or perhaps the many different genders that Hurak may have. Being attracted to someone with extremely high Hurak, and that's how they breed. It may well be that's what happened way in the past, but we've not got into those sort of details because there's quite a lot of detail in the book, in the leaflets, the PDF as it is in the first place, which is fantastic.
Rick's just knocking on your door. He's like, we need to talk about Huck procreation. Yeah. It's important.
I also like it because it sounds like the Huck were like, we're so cool. And then the moment they realized there was like whole civilizations, they were like, everyone will know I'm cool.
Yeah. Absolutely everybody. There is a story which I read a proof of and put some editing comments on, which I really, really hope comes out. And you know who you are, who you wrote it. You know, I think it's a fantastic story. And for really, really good reasons, it was a bounty hunter race. And the Huck did not win the bounty hunter race. I won't go any further because there's a really, really lovely Huck, which I really love.
But, there's a Huck.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it will be that it will come out, because it's either one that we'll shove up on the website or make a fuss out of, or I hope it's one that even gets sent into Zmok or whatever, because it's the background is it's a really, really nice story, and I was really quite chuffed with it, chuffed to read it. So yes, that will be nice to see a Huck actually coming in second.
Hot Huck on Huck action.
Yeah. Oh my god, Sergey. Now that we know that the Gar can have them, so the Gar outcasts, right? They become physically ill when they see a panhuman, right?
Yep.
What if you made like a unit of outcasts that was like absolute fanboys of the Huck? Like they were like, it's so cool. Be as strong as him. You need to get like plush hats they've created in their pastime, like out of like the bags they've been given or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they have like the foam fingers. but it's yes. got like a little hook claw on it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It
yeah.
comes onto the battlefield looking all cool, and they're just like.
There's one with like a fake fin on.
Yeah,
that'd be so great. Make like posters they're holding.
No, they got pennants on sticks that say
hook. Yes, yes.
Or the big number one foam fingers.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, I think you looked at me.
It would make sense. The guy probably would really enjoy the hook. He has a very similar mentality to their frothing bloodlust.
Yes.
And their the obsessive inability to fail at killing things.
Well, yeah, unless they've got battle suit on. Yeah, that's the thing. It's and there's always there's a the hook. There's a story which went out with the hook in the first place, which was about the bounty hunter being hired by someone. I think he was hired to be some sort of bodyguard. I can't remember what it was, but it's on the hook page as well. And that whole mystique is really critical, and the contempt they see other people who try to be on the same peer as them, who try to make themselves out to be peers. So it's sort of yes, I'm as good as you, Herc. Look at this, I captured 10 humans last week, and the Herc just thinks, excuse me, whilst I just pick this battle suit out of my teeth. Sorry, you do get stuck.
Yeah, anybody got a toothpick?
Yes. Oh, don't mind me. I'll just use this this plasma claw as a toothpick. It's just.
Like a terrible award ceremony. Someone's like, now the Ashguard did fantastic, and the Huck get a special thanks. He's just like at the other end of the table, leaning forward, staring at them. You're like, no, this is gold. This isn't gold. This is copper. We're good. You're good.
So there we go. That's right. Summarized, I think, most of them quite well. The Ashguard are really quite the lost children of a former civilization. The Hirk are an expanding civilization of elite bounty hunters. And the thing is that wherever planets crop up and wherever there's some form of corrupt leadership, there'll be a need to hire a Hirk, a specialized hunter. And whenever there's a rather active war zone, then there'll be a need for an elite unit like the Ashguard. And the Ashguard are meant to be an elite unit. We, as I said in version 2, there's some not so elite mercenary units. And of course, we've got Hanser and Boven are just brilliant leaders. So we're sort of like trying to cover various spaces on the tabletop as we go forward with them.
Excellent. Now, Nache.
Yes.
Any questions on any of the mercenaries?
Okay, so.
Yes, he does. All right, good. Go for it.
It sounds like a lot of the mercenary units are one-off characters. Am I correct? Like,
except for the Ashguard.
With the exception of the Ashguard.
Well, yeah. It sounds like the Hook, or whatever. sounds like there's just one of him, right?
No, it's one of those Highlander races where it's like there can only be one. So it's like if there's like a freeborn meet and greet and they're like, have you met my Huck friend? And the guy turns around and it's another Huck, they're gonna murder each other.
Okay, but there's like, so you would never have an army of them because. Before right. they even got to the, as soon as they got out of the car, their cars in the parking lot, there'd be a brawl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, that's right.
They'd be like walking down to the cargo bay, and they'd be like, "Now we have a bunch of Hucks over here." And they just open the door. They're
and there's like one left.
He's like, "How's like, the bus? How's the bus? I think great."
All right.
So you can only ever hire one Hook in your army.
Okay. And then. I guess never mind. That's something else. And then there's that Tog guy. I guess he was old enough, and you just want him to go away if he could.
Well, that's just my own. That's my own personal opinion. That is not an official opinion.
No, I know that. I'm well aware of that. But there is only.
There is only one.
There is only Zool. I'm Tog.
Yeah.
Right.
There is only one Tog. Just like there is only one. And one of the big problems about producing more Tog is that the others of his species are not going to be as good as he is.
Right, because he's the best of the best of the best, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and there's always this other people, other people in his species just not looking as good. You know, maybe they'll be as bulky, so they'll have the same sort of strength.
Yeah.
But they won't have the same
stats. Because, you know, let's be honest. There's Dolph Lundgren. And then there's me.
Right.
So even in Dolph Lundgren's experienced years, he could probably still whip my ass two ways to Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're both humans.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other issue. The others of his species just won't be the same. They won't have as high initiative, command, or agility. And, all the rest of his. And he is a leader, actually, because he's got command, follow, and hero stats on him as well. So he is intended to lead groups of mercenaries. And that's similar as well to Hansen Oroba and Bervan Took. They are leaders, and there's only one of them, not because they are the Hansa and the Boven of the human species, the human race, you know.
Yeah. Is it the Askari? The
Asgard.
Whatever. The grasshopper dudes. Now they have no human genetics in them, correct? They are truly alien.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. Are we going to see more truly alien creatures coming in the future?
Yes. I was telling you about the mercenary competition and the creature that won from that. One of the things we really liked about it was a fully imagined, completely and utterly non-human species. Cool. Which we're using as mercenaries. And there was a really good reason for that species being around and a really good reason for that species being in the way they were on the tabletop.
Right.
And because it was such a solid, fully integrated realization of that species, we just couldn't help but make it the winner. And I really, really hope that, you know, that would come out pretty soon in 2021. But it depends on what our workload is when I go back to work.
Oh, absolutely. So don't know.
And at the moment, don't forget, Nottingham's under lockdown. Because of the problems that with COVID springing up in Nottingham. And whilst I think the outlying regions are sort of like released, the core, Clifton mostly, I think, is, you know, under lockdown again. So we may have some restrictions going on there for a while. So we don't know what's going to happen. The other thing is I don't know what our workload is when we get back. But yes, the Askar, completely different race. The winners of the other competition are completely different race as well. And we'd really, really love to get the Vorl out. I don't know when they'd come.
I'm so damn excited for that.
Yeah, so
I think everybody is.
Yeah, I think everybody would love to see the Vorl, and it's just making sure that we've got the window to actually do them justice, because they're, as envisaged so far, they're actually really quite different. And
it's not a bad thing. Take
great care to produce them. Again, they're just totally different. They're totally alien.
So, real quickly, last thing, this guy here, Nairobi, whatever the hell his name is.
Hanson Nairobi.
Yeah. Is it just me, or does he look like Christopher Plummer from Star Trek VI and the Undiscovered Country?
He does, yes. To be or not to be. Ha, ha, ha,
ha. That's how he's getting painted. That's how he's getting painted.
Sergey's like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Come on, man.
Has a question. Morzima has a question here. If a person in Imtel society would want to become a mercenary, would Imtel just arrange some play fights to fulfill that desire? Yes, in as much as it could. Imtel would try to allow that wish to be explored in some way, but it's more likely to actually try and channel them into first into the C3 Concord Combined Command, where that person could possibly work out that sort of wish anyway. And then only after they've been in the C3 for a while is it likely that the Imtel would recommend that they go somewhere else. But the first off would be play fights or just fairly safe things. And yes, the whole thing about people just acting out temporary fantasies like paintball match against robots or that sort of stuff is absolutely part of what the Imtel would do. So you'd have probably it would be a highly advanced laser tag where if you had a kill shot against you, your suit would just make you be immobile, which is a little bit like was actually in the film of Ender's Game, I think, and in the book of Ender's Game, cool. I think. So I think Mozimas has hit it on the head with what would happen there. And Rubens, are the Vol ready in terms of concept? And the answer is, I don't know. There is a concept... And whether or not we'd stick to that concept, we just don't know. One of the things I have to keep stressing is that when we go back, Antares is all up in the air. And that's one thing that the whole COVID crisis and the lockdown has actually done. It's meant that we've been able to go ahead with stuff like Victory at Sea, which was already in the pipeline anyway, well down in the pipeline. And we can actually go... actually explore and set up some new goals or anything else for Antares. So it's everything's up in the air. Don't know where to go.
That's unfortunate.
Well,
the whole thing is unfortunate.
It's good. COVID's unfortunate, but in this case, it's means in some ways that, we can revisit what we want to do with Antares. Yeah. So, hey, that's fine. Let's put it back by a year. Yeah. Version 2 back by a year, but
It gives it more time
to play with. Anyway, I have got to get back to some decorating.
Yes.
my wife's just appeared with her decorating smock on.
Oh, right.
Paintbrush in hand and a whip in the other. So.
I mean, I think we pretty much covered the mercenaries. The next episode we're going to do, and hopefully, and this is just a hopefully, it's not a promise, that we can get Rick on for, is to talking about the Nexus in general. And what is it? What surrounds it? Maybe go into a little bit of, engineering, geography, something along those lines. Of what the Nexus looks like, how it was formed, yada, yada, yada. And I think that's going to be an awesome episode. And the next one after that will be announced. That's going to be TBA. So come up with our next topic, maybe strategies of Antares.
Yeah.
Like that. So thank you, Tim. Thank you, Kevin, Sergey, Jay, of course, the newbie, the new guy, the noob. As my son called,
who's finally
assembling Antares,
got stuff.
Yeah,
well, lovely to see.
Oh, and do want to show this one off before?
Such a cool model.
Come on.
Yeah, she looks fantastic, didn't she?
You know what that model is to him? That's a make him happy model. Because I gave him that.
Yeah, she is a fantastic looking model, and it's Locomite is brill. Anyway, guys, I'll love you and leave you, and
there we go, finally.
Lovely being on again, and I hope people have some fun with some mercenaries. Take care.
All right, ta-ta.
Absolutely. See you guys.
That's all we got for you guys. Thanks for watching. We really appreciate it. And episode 10. Can you believe that? We're going to be on episode 10 when we come back. So last but not least, from me to you, ta-ta. And we'll catch you in the next Atari's Adventure.